Yes, good low. Hello, and welcome to Demystifying Detection Dogs with MD Dogs. I'm the founder of MD Dogs, Libby Rockaway, and I'm here with my co-host, Maggie Kudla, owner of Sit, Stay, Lex.
Hi, I'm excited to jump in and discuss all things diabetic alert dog. Go ahead and grab a drink because we can talk about dogs for hours. Literally.
I love that.
Okay, so last podcast we went over step 8 through 10 of Sit and Train Your Diabetic Alert Dog. So if you have any questions about those, go back to our episode 8 to get that information. Today, we're going to be going over step 11 through 14 of the MD Dog Scent Training Book. Step 11 is, I think, the most fun step. I actually really, really enjoy it. I think that this is the scent wheel. So this is where you work on helping your dog really, really understand the odor that we're looking for and just solidifying it in their brain. I think it's really, really fun to watch them process the information of them trying to figure out how to work the wheel, understand the odor, and everything that entails. Libby, I will have you start off. How do you begin the scent wheel process? Because I know it's a little different than what you have in the book currently, and you do it a little different now.
I do. So the first thing I do a little bit differently is actually with the scent wheel materials. So it used to be that I would use, I think, like, couple inch PVC caps upside down that you would screw in. And now I kind of use these almost like a funnel type PVC where it has a narrow opening at the top and it then spreads out. So I think it's like, I forget actually what the exact materials are, but it's something like a 2-inch to 4-inch PVC adapter or like a flange or something like that. We can, I don't know, look at it and put it in the notes on this podcast. I think we can link it and I'll go find it. But anyways, so I start with that. Yes.
Is it, I'm showing Libby my laptop. Is it that thing?
Yeah. What's that called?
That is called, this one is the Pipe PVC DWV Increaser Reducer.
Yeah, Increaser Reducer. That's what it is. Yep. And basically it lets you take a smaller PVC pipe and turn it into a bigger one. And so I do that just because then you kind of, it's removable. So you put that on the scent wheel and you can pop it on and off because that's how I intro it now. But then also it gives the dog a spot to actually put their nose in where then they're inhaling the odor. Like it's kind of this pocket full of odor once they stick their nose in. And so the odor is less likely to mix with the surrounding containers because it's just a little bit more contained.
Yeah.
When you use that. So that's why I switched it over.
Yeah. No, I like it, especially, and I don't know if you would recommend for like larger breeds, but I love watching your dog do the scent with those little spaniels because they can shove their whole nose in.
The whole nose. Yeah.
And so like not enough to like contaminate any of the samples, but like I wonder, would you do like a lab? This is a random question. Mm-hmm. Would you do a bigger hole?
I would.
Okay.
Yeah. That's fun. I've thought about it. I think I made it work with Rooney.
She was like,
yeah, 55, 60 pounds. For a dog even bigger than that, I do think like instead of 2-inch to 4-inch, I would try and do, you know, 3-inch to 5-inch or whatever.
Yeah.
I really like that though. But, so those are removable. So you can just kind of pop them on. They're not super easy to pop on, but when I intro the wheel now, I actually introduce just that increaser reducer piece. And so I put that on the ground, with the scent sample inside of it, but no wheel, just that one piece. And I shape the dog to sticking their nose inside of it. And so there's only one of those PVC pieces. The low blood sugar sample is inside of it, just kind of chilling in a scent tone. And then shape it just like anything else where you mark and reward for gradually closer steps to sticking their nose in it. And I do that until I can be, you know, a couple feet away and the dog is going to the container, to the PVC piece and sticking their nose in. I click and they come back to me for a treat. And so that kind of starts to set up this concept of I go to the source of the odor
and I stay there until I hear my click, and then I come back and I get my reinforcement. But it's in a super easy way where there's not a whole wheel that's confusing. And so, yeah, that's kind of the very first step to it.
Yeah, do I like this different approach?
It's much more dog trainer-esque and less shove the dog in the deep end and see what happens.
Yeah, I like how it breaks down the, not just the whole scent wheel, but it just gives them a tiny portion. I feel like it's more bite size, and this, and I think it's going to set dogs up for success better.
Yeah.
So they understand that, like, the goal is that they first learn to go and shove their nose in this thing that is just there, and they get rewarded for that.
Yeah.
And then as you move it closer to the wheel and then actually put it on and everything, I think it makes it where it's less growing pains, if you will. And I think, I think for clients, it'll hopefully, I'm interested to see how many people will do this. Do you have any videos of this anywhere?
I do have one. I did a video of either Scout or Olaf, or maybe both, because I was kind of developing it at the same time that I was doing both of their sound wheel intros.
Yeah.
And I think I stitched together at least one of them. I stitched together, like, hey, step by step, this is how we do it. So maybe we can link that too.
Yeah. I like that idea. Just so the visual, because it's hard to visually, it's hard to explain it.
It's hard.
Like, you get this PVC, and then it's like 3 feet from the scent wheel, and then you, you know.
That's true. A video would be very helpful right now.
I see on the, it's on the MD Dogs. If you go to the very, very bottom, so if you go to mddogs.org, go to free resources, and then there's a self-training video section.
Wow.
If you scroll all the way to the bottom, you'll see diabetic alert dog training intro scent wheel, and you'll see... Huh. I think I see Scout, and I think Olaf as well.
Oh, well, look at that.
There you go.
Apparently, I already put it up.
There you go. We'll link it as well, cool. Just so it's easily in the notes of the podcast, so you can find it. But I like this part. It's just really, I think, really, really lovely for the dog. With the scent wheel, I feel like that's where hairy things kind of happen with clients, where they... The goal is for the dog to do it independently, and I feel like this is another stage where people want to help their dogs a lot. Yes. I think the way that you have it set up now is going to cause less frustration for clients. I'm thinking it's going to make them where they know, like, if they really follow the exact protocol you have now, I think it's going to – the dog's not going to second-guess anything, because every time a dog second-guesses something and the client is handling them, they want to immediately help. And so I feel like as a trainer, I'll let dogs, like, if I see a dog second guessing, I will let them take a moment to process and work through that frustration. And if
large helicopter,
there's a helicopter going by because we live near hospitals. I'll as a trainer, I will let a dog sit and think about things for a moment, like not super long, maybe like 10 seconds, 15 seconds.
It feels like an eternity.
I literally, if I am like thinking I'm trying to rush a dog, I will count in my head. One, two, three, four. And if the dog hasn't figured it out by then I'll go back and assist them. But I want to give them the opportunity to process things. And I think this will help clients not feel the need to step in to immediately help their dog, because we want to help our pups. We want to make it as easy as possible. And so we think that helping is going to help them. But I think in the long run, it'll cause your dog to not work as independently. Yeah,
exactly. And I think, you know, stepping back, like, the best way to help our dog is to actually approach it in smaller steps from the get-go and not throw them in to something that's too difficult where they're bound to fail and then try and assist.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this method... The reason why I, you know, switched it up is because otherwise you're basically setting your dog up to fail, where you're saying, here's an entire scent wheel that you've never seen before. Now we're going to just, like, walk around it until you happen to pause at the right thing.
Yeah.
And this way we're saying, okay, there's this one singular new object. Your job is to stick your snoot in it. And there happens to be a low blood sugar in it, but I'm not asking them to go find the low blood sugar out of multiple identical containers. It's like, nope, here's the thing. They're naturally going to sniff it anyways because they're like, what the heck is this, Mom?
Yeah.
Like, where'd that come from? And then you can just capture it.
Move along. I think the hard part for clients is that not only they think that their dog doesn't get the odor, mm-hmm. but they haven't learned how to use the scent wheel yet.
Yeah.
And that's, you're simultaneously doing a couple things. Mm-hmm. And I think clients will think that, like, oh, my dog doesn't get, like, isn't doing well because it doesn't get the odor. I don't know.
Yep.
But it's just, scent wheel is kind of hard for dogs.
It is.
It's not, this is higher level diabetic alert dogs. This mm-hmm. is scent based in their medical detection dogs. And it's a little bit harder than just, not saying other service dogs are easier or harder to train, but I feel like the medical alert requires a certain independence mm-hmm. that we have to,
for sure,
you know, curate with our dog.
Yeah.
I don't even know if curate is the right word, just give it a mind. But yeah, I think it's
definitely
a process.
It is. It is a process, and we have to teach them a lot of things in order to use this as a tool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because I guess, yeah, I probably should have said that at the start of this, but it is perfectly possible to have a great diabetic alert dog who has no idea what a scent wheel is or how it works.
Mm-hmm.
This is an optional tool to have in your toolbox. I personally like it. I think it's a great way to reinforce the odor you're looking for, a great way to teach thresholds to a dog,
mm-hmm.
a great way to be able to change thresholds in the future. But there are loads of diabetic alert dogs out there who have never done anything this formal.
Mm-hmm.
And also another disclaimer or thing to put out there is we're using the term scent wheel because that's what MD Dogs uses, because that's what I have found is easiest. But it's the same concept. If you use like dogs for diabetics in California, they use buckets and mm-hmm. they do bucket training.
Yeah.
And it's the same concept of you put the low blood sugar in one, in range blood sugars in the others, mm-hmm. you know, or blanks or whatever. Or scent walls.
Yeah.
Actual detection dog trainers mm-hmm. use scent walls. So it's all the same concept. It's just kind of how you do it.
Yeah. MD Dogs Mac mm-hmm. did scent buckets.
Yeah, he did buckets.
He was just such a big oaf.
Yeah.
That I feel like the buckets were, I was able to spread them out.
Exactly.
And he was a little, you know, he's like a lumbering lab mm-hmm. bear or something. I don't know. And I think he liked the buckets a lot.
Yeah.
I want to go back just to clarify something that you said. Thresholds, just in case people mm-hmm. don't know what thresholds are. So there's a number that you pick that you want your dog to alert at. So let's say 80 and below, you want your dog to be comfortable at alerting to for your blood sugar. In order to get the dog to understand exactly what that threshold is, yeah, we spend a lot of time reinforcing the smell of, you know, 75 and below, just mm-hmm. to make sure that the dog really gets it. And then with the scent wheel, you bring in range scent samples. So let's say you're wanting, you know, you'll do 90s and maybe 100s and 110 and just different levels where you don't want your dog to alert to. Basically, this just solidifies everything in their brain to let them know, like, oh, yeah, okay, this mm-hmm. is actually what I want to smell, not this higher level. That's also important to think about, is like picking your threshold and where you want them mm-hmm. to alert and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where this comes in handy, is you can make it very concrete for the dog.
Yeah. I would imagine if you don't do the scent wheel and then your dog is false alerting, then you should use the scent wheel.
Exactly.
Like almost like I recommend everyone doing the scent mm-hmm. wheel, but if you're like, no, I don't really want to for whatever reason, but then your dog is false alerting, then mm-hmm. they don't understand the odor quite as well.
Yeah.
Like if it's really an issue of false alerting.
Yeah. I mean, so that from that point of view, you know, we have it as step 11, but this could be step, you know, kind of swap this with step 14. So after the dog starts alerting to live blood sugars, then maybe you include the scent wheel afterwards as like a, hey, you know, we still have the motivation mm-hmm. to do this.
Yeah.
Or also as a, oh no, my dog is now false alerting.
Yeah.
I need to go fix it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, actually, I think that makes
work.
Sense. I think that could work. Yeah. Almost like, yeah. That's kind
as
of
like the last step.
As the last
step. While your dog is still alerting to mm-hmm. actual live low blood sugars that they've mm-hmm. just started doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Play around with it. I mean, I'm probably not going to because I'm not a type 1.
Yeah. So. I feel like, to be honest, I'd introduce it probably earlier in the steps.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if that's necessarily correct, but I basically do it. Like, once the dog really understands the odor, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm comfortable with moving them to the scent wheel.
Yeah.
Sooner rather than later. I don't know if I'd recommend clients doing it. Because if you're type one, then you don't have to worry about as much. But we have to use all the tools that we have available mm-hmm. to us. And that's one of them.
Yeah. I feel like this is It's almost like a whole separate game that you play with your dog.
Yeah, it's a game.
And it doesn't really matter where you put it, just that you probably should.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, maybe it should in the future just be an optional thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because, again, if you're type 1, your dog is living with you 24/7. And if you just, you know, have puppy parties when you're low, in addition to, you know, the majority of these steps, the dog mm-hmm. will probably get it figured out.
Yeah.
And then you might end up with a dog that false alerts, and then you do this game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that sounds good. Let us know if it fails miserably.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to do it, but
if
you want to do it.
Yeah. If you don't want to do the sit wheel, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I know loads of people who have gone through the steps and never get around to doing the scent wheel because they don't want to go to Lowe's, and that seems like a big handyman project, or because they do build one and their dog never truly gets it, probably because the steps in there aren't mm-hmm. super straightforward.
It's a lot of work to build the scent wheel. I thought about making scent wheels for people and selling them.
Yeah.
But then I realized I also didn't like that work that much. I think I sold it to one client because they just had zero, didn't know how mm-hmm. to use a drill. So it was I'll help you with that.
I still think there's any. I think there's probably shouldn't share all of our business ideas on here, but I think only 3 people listen. So,
right. Maybe 5.
Maybe 5 now. We put it on Facebook,
right?
I think there's a business idea. You have kind of talked about it, I think,
mm-hmm.
of basically providing all the scent training materials.
Yeah.
Right. And saying, okay, here's all the things. Here's the scent tins.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how you store it with instructions. I think you had an idea at one point of almost a week by week thing.
Yeah. So
step by step.
I think mainly because I appreciate something that is kind of hey, you need to do your homework.
Yeah.
Totally. It kind of forces you. I go to rally class with my dog, not because I don't think I can teach my dog to be a rally dog outside of class, but then if I go to my rally class and I haven't done my homework mm-hmm. and my dog looks silly, then I'm gonna be should have done my homework.
Yep, I should have done it.
So I think it's almost accountability. I thought not bark box or anything like that, but just.
And also, I mean, self-training is a lot of work anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So having to look at a book and then say, okay, she got this from Amazon, and then you go search for it. And then you have to find, and there's 25 different versions because they're all ultimately produced by the same person in China, mm-hmm. but there's multiple different sellers and you're comparing, you know, at least I am, what is it, Enneagram 5 or something, which is the researcher. So I will over-research dental gauze.
Oh, I forgot what Enneagram I am. I'm not going to look it up right now.
So I will over-research literally anything that can be possibly over-researched. And that leads to me taking 3 weeks to decide what materials to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also other people who they just have really busy lives and they don't really, you know, they would love it if a kit just showed up on their dog, on their doorstep. A diabetic alert dog training scent kit.
Okay. If you are interested in this, message.
Yeah.
MDDogs.Libby on Instagram and let her know. And then maybe it'll inspire me to actually do this. Because I don't want to do. It feels like a lot of work to do. I feel like I need a 3D printer or something to make my own stuff. Is that wild?
Oh, man. Oh, no. I have gone down this hole, too.
I would love to just – because I hate having to go mm-hmm. to – there's an exact thing I have in my brain of how I want to do a scent wheel.
Yep.
And then I can't find the parts to perfectly fit together, and then it ticks me off.
So I designed a 3D print – or a scent wheel with 3D printed parts at one point.
Oh.
And I talked to somebody who does 3D printing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the biggest thing is 3D printers are it's kind of expensive to print big ones.
Mm.
So you can't print an entire wheel.
I was just thinking about
the individual parts, the individual cups.
Yeah.
Because what I wanted is I wanted a foldable one that's collapsible.
Oh.
Because these things, the current ones are giant blocks of wood.
Yeah.
And then you can't fold it down.
And then shipping's a pain.
And shipping, you can't ship it anywhere. So I want to use tripod design at the bottom. And then you raise and lower it for the height of the dog.
That would be so cool.
I know. But again, same issue of I couldn't figure out where to get all the different parts.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed more time with it.
Yeah.
Distracted with life.
Right.
And things that pay the bills.
Right. The scent wheel, then you spend all the money to make it. But
But a couple months ago, I was looking at the 3D printing.
I want one too. But I feel you have to spend a certain amount of money to get the one, because you get the lower quality, then they're not as good.
So the advice I was told by my engineering brothers was, yeah, before you go spend a whole bunch of money on this, which is probably a temporary
focus, fixation, yeah.
Fixation, exactly. Why don't you go use the free ones at the library?
Yeah, they do have free ones at the library.
I should probably do that.
Okay, well, let us know maybe, if you want this, and then
we'll do this.
Maybe we'll do this.
We'll take if a break one, from
if
podcasts.
One, if one person shows interest,
we will probably do it.
We'll probably do it because we have no impulse control. Okay, yeah, no, but I think that the scent wheel is a pain to build. I will say, like, anytime I remember pickles, the first one, I'm like reading your book. I'm like,
even though practically it's not hard.
No, but it like
it's really not.
But like every place has different things, and then the things don't fit together. I literally had to like create this like, and my first scent wheel is wild. Like it is wild. I don't even know how I got this thing put together, but it was I like had to wet things wedged and stuff. Yeah, it was insane.
I know. Yeah.
The buckets were actually the easiest for me to make because I've made 3 scent wheels now, and maybe 4. I don't know. The buckets were fine.
Fine.
The buckets were easier, but they're too tall for spaniels. It was only for lab.
Yeah, but there are baby buckets. There's Home Depot.
That's true.
Or I've also thought, I've seen some. There's Cadet, I think, in the research that they did for Seizure Alert, they used paint cans, like unused paint cans from from Lowe's.
Oh.
They're metal. So you can sanitize them. Yeah. They're short for little dogs.
That's true.
And then you could probably also build some sort of insert where you can dump the scent tin into it.
Yeah. Because that's how I have it, where the bucket, it just has a container.
Yep.
That I bought from a different scent at the Kentuckiana cluster years ago. Yeah. I bought that little.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, I use those little cups.
Yep.
And I basically like use Chicago screws to like Chicago screw the lid to the top.
Chicago screw is.
I only know because of barrel racing, because it's like how you hold bridles and stuff together.
Oh.
It's basically like flat.
Okay.
Okay, it doesn't really matter. You can look Chicago screw. I don't know. I only know because of horses.
Yep.
But
anyways, I think moral of the story is you can make it however you want.
Make it however you want. I think it's cool. I think as a dog nerd, I think it's really fascinating. But I don't think it's like a huge requirement unless your dog is having false alerting issues, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right. Do you feel
anything
else you want to add about scent wheel?
Okay, just real quick. I think I only got to the part of like the dog sticking their snoot in it.
Oh, yeah.
So the rest of the steps, we'll just go through this real fast. You basically move it. So I think then I tend to bring out a second one of the same, like the same exact identical piece, that reducer, put it next to it, but continue to have the dog search for the one with the low sample in it. Mm-hmm. They don't realize that you've put a second one out even.
Okay. And so then, it's that far
away. So yeah, you put it far away so they don't even realize it. And then you put a third one and it's far away, but I put that on the other side. And then what I tend to do is then I put them all on the wheel. But I prop the wheel up on books so it can't spin.
Mm.
So it's very stationary. I lied. I put just the one on the wheel.
Without any of the other?
Without any of the others. So it's literally now, like, instead of that reducer being on the floor, now it's on the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
But the wheel doesn't move. And they're like, oh, okay, you know, fine. It's not too different. And then you put in the ones that look similar next to it. Still have the dog searching straight ahead. Like, you make it as simple as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then you keep putting them all on, you know, one by one until you have a whole wheel full of these things. The dog is fine, is going to the one closest with the low sample in it.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And then I rotate it and have the dog find the correct one. But still haven't taken it off the books. So it's still stationary. You really should watch a video for this, because this is a lot of things, a lot of words I'm spitting out.
It makes sense to me, but I've seen the video.
Okay, good. So I'm glad it makes sense for you.
It makes sense.
It's kind of going on and on, concerned. So you just change the, rotate the wheel a little bit, but without letting it spin, because we want to make sure that the dog is super confident before we start to let it spin.
Yeah, the spinning, I did that with Pickles. I let like spinning happen immediately, and I think it just caused chaos.
Yeah, it causes chaos, because either they get startled and concerned, or they're like, oh my gosh, that was so much fun. I'm going to like step all over it. Like,
where'd it go? Mm-hmm. And it turned into a toy.
So. Yeah.
Anyways, and then once they're doing that and you can like rotate it in different spots, then you take the books out and you can spin it. Mm. And then you have a dog that searches the scent wheel.
Yeah. How many reducers do you have on your scent wheel?
Ooh, good question. I have as many that will fit. I think on the wheels I have 6 mm-hmm. just because of size.
Yeah.
More is better.
Yeah.
More is better because what we do is we start with one low and the rest are blanks. And what we mean by blanks is they are empty.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just teaching the concept of searching. You're not actually trying to distinguish between samples right now. But more is better because what we do is once we add in range, this is probably a whole other podcast. So dogs are really good at gambling. They are perfectly okay gambling. So if you have one in range and one low blood sugar, you can do a million repetitions of this and the dog will continue to just guess because 50% success is good enough in their book.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you think about like playing the lottery, like if you won 50% of the time, I mean, that's pretty darn good.
Right? Yeah, I feel like, the four mm-hmm. is too little.
Four is too little. Yeah.
I think even there's a Christina that does a scent class at where I work. She, whenever we do any type of scent stuff, she wants to have like 8 to 10
mm-hmm.
different. Like we do like if I do scent discrimination for barn hunt, so like rat in one tube, rat odor, and then the rest are like blanks or litters.
Yeah.
She's like, do as many litter tubes that you can find and put them down.
Exactly.
Just so they don't gamble. So they actually think about the odor.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs are
perfectly happy guessing and sometimes being right.
Right, exactly.
So basically the concept is like, if they're right half the time, they're never going to learn. If they're right a quarter of the time, it's going to take a really long time for them to learn. If they're right, math is not my strength, so 1 out of 6 times, whatever percentage that is, they'll get it. But they'll be even faster if they are looking for 1 out of 8 or mm-hmm. 1 out of 10. Just because they'll put it together faster because of how reinforcement theory works.
No, I think that's great. A couple other questions that I do have. Alerting. So you use duration.
Ooh, good question.
For the dog shoves their nose in mm-hmm. and they hold in like the beginning, I assume you took like a split second and then you gradually increase the duration. But if you have a dog that has a paw alert, do you want them to paw on the scent wheel or do you are okay with the client just working on duration of the nose being near the odor?
That's a good question.
Yeah. And I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. So when you first intro it, obviously dog snoot in the correct thing. Great. Mm-hmm. So then when we, like the kind of the first step where you'll run into this is the part where you put that reducer onto the wheel and you have a second reducer on it as well, right? Because then there's two things that the dog has to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
They're initially going to always go to the right one. Great.
Yeah.
At that point, I'm just reinforcing it. I'm like, I'll extend duration a little bit, but like 2 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll max it out. Like I'm not looking for a 10-second duration here.
Yeah, yeah.
But then once you start changing the position of it, of where that target odor is, that's when you'll have to actually make a decision. And the first couple times, I don't require any indication. I just, they stick their nose in the right one, that works.
Yeah.
And I do that until they're super confident, until it's like, oh, okay, they know what they're doing.
This is what we're doing.
Yeah. And then, you know, I just keep doing that. But like ultimately, what I have switched over to is I do not care how they tell me because dogs are so bad at generalizing that their behavior on the scent wheel is not going to change how they alert in real life to like an actual low blood sugar. So if they want to paw the scent wheel, great. I will take it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they already have a strong paw alert, usually we'll see this anyways.
Offering.
But I will also take a duration. Some of my dogs will sniff and then lay down. I think Bead does that.
Mm-hmm.
And even for her, it's not the same behavior every time. And I still don't care. Yeah. As long as I know. Yeah.
It's about them learning odor.
Yeah.
And like, there's tons of even like police dogs. Like mm-hmm. they don't have a real alert necessarily. Not like correct. A, yeah. Not like a, it's a, you can just watch it, body language. It's
always a change of behavior.
Yeah. Like if I'm, yeah, no, I'll, if you just notice a slight change of behavior and you just get really, you get to know your dog really well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cause I've even had it in scent sports that I do with my Aussie. She's a little gets nervous of strangers, so her alerts are not as clear in practice when she's doing barn hunt. But I can tell just the way she will, if she, if there's like a rat tube near like the judge or the rat wrangler, she won't alert on it, but she'll literally sniff it, make eye contact with me and move away. And it, but I know she made eye contact with me. I'm like, that's the rat.
Yeah.
Like I can tell just by that little like difference where she doesn't want to hang out near the judge that much.
Yeah.
Or the whoever's in the ring with us that she doesn't know. And so she's a little bit more like, and, but I'm like, I'll take that. Like, I'm fine. Like, I can tell, okay, that's the rat. Like, I will, because I'm a dog trainer, I can't help myself for her to actually, I help her a little bit with assisting it because I know she's doing it from a place of insecurity and not lack of training. But I think just reading your dog's body language is like, I'm sure downs or maybe sits or like shoves her nose in or like maybe
she makes it very clear which one it is.
Yeah. Yeah. She gets really amped about whatever, which one she gets to. And then it's like, oh, yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. And it, and it doesn't matter what it is as long as you can see that objectively it's a change in behavior.
Yeah.
I think the one kind of qualification I'll put on this is self-trainers, it's really easy to think you see a change of behavior and it's only because you know objectively where it is. And then the dog is actually just guessing. Yeah. So I've seen people submit videos to me for verification, for MD Dogs verification that we have, where you have to do a scent wheel and you have to be able to demonstrate that your dog has a clear alert behavior when they find the low. Because what we need to see is before we're going to put our name behind anybody's dog, we need to know that they actually know what they're doing. But what I have seen is people submit videos and the dog sniffs each container and they say yes when the dog sniffs the correct container. Because which the dog is fine, the container.
Which is fine, baby level.
That's an intro, exactly.
Yeah,
that's
intro.
That's a perfect, like, for that first step that I was talking about, right?
Yeah.
Where you're, you know, slowly adding in different containers that are identical. But when you're at the final stages, your dog needs to have an actual indication to show you they know what they have found, and not that they are just like searching every container doing the same thing. And that goes the same if your dog paws every container as they go around. I've also seen that, you know, where the dog is super enthusiastic and they run to the first one and they whack it. And then you don't reward them. So they run to the next one and they whack it. And you don't reward them, run to the next one, you whack it. And you say, yeah, good job. You found it. Well, they whacked every single one of them. Right. So I think that's the most important part is knowing that your dog has a change in behavior.
Yes. And not just the behavior. Not just the behavior. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard to coach. I'm trying to think of how I could coach someone through on a podcast on how to do that.
I don't know. Schedule a consult.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'm thinking about, like, how I would do it. Like, it's just, like, watching the dog.
Yeah.
Like, I'll let them, like, if I'm increasing duration, typically the dog, like, let's say I'm doing a nose nudge or something. I don't know. They smell it or the duration on it, on the odor. They put it for a split second and then they look at you.
Yep. Exactly.
And so I want a dog that's going to go back immediately, or not immediately, but I count to 10 and I want them to think through the process. So I make my, make sure I stay still.
Yeah.
I don't look at the dog in the eye. And I just kind of stare at the scent wheel.
Yeah.
Seeing if they'll offer another going back to the same container that has the correct low.
Yeah.
That's hard to explain it. I'm struggling with like, how do I explain it without like showing?
Yeah. It's almost like you need to see commitment to that one container.
Yeah, yeah, commitment. I want to almost like if they'll sniff it and then take their nose out of it, that's fine.
If they go back to it.
If they go back to it whenever I'm increasing duration. So this is more of like the later stages in the sense that your dog stumbled across it a few times, blah, blah, blah. But then I'm wanting to see a little bit more initiative of like I smell it and then they get excited and they take their nose out and then I want them to put it back and like almost double check.
Like if we are going to anthropomorphize, which I think is okay at points. It's basically them saying, I found it. And they're like, why have you not rewarded me, mom? And they stick, they put their nose out and they stare at you. And they're like,
Did you not see? I did it. Like, I found it.
And then put their nose back in.
And they put their nose back in.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they go to the, you know, one off to the left or to the right and then immediately go back to the correct one.
Yeah.
Where you can see their thought process being like, mm-hmm. no, it's this one. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of getting a little frustrated of, I know I found it and you haven't rewarded me yet.
Yeah. Do you have any videos of dogs doing it? Like thinking through that process?
I think, yeah. I think on YouTube.
Okay.
We have quite a few where you can see, and some of them even call out where, like, the dog passes over the odor and then goes and finds it, goes back.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I think there should be some.
Yeah, because it doesn't mean your dog's broken. They're just problem solving.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I'm okay with saying that. Like, that doesn't bother me at all. It's a part of the process.
Yeah. And you think about how odor works. Like, even I, like, I'll be walking somewhere and I'm like, what's that smell? And then, like, you kind of stick your nose up in the air and you kind of can change directions. But, like, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
That's the same way they can work. Like, they can actually pass over it, or they can be like, yeah, I think this is it. And it's like, oh, no, it's not it. And, like, thinking through it, it's very normal.
This is really, really random, but my ADD is on fire today. I live, like, not super close to the Jif mm-hmm. peanut butter factory, but I live kind of close to it. On certain days, depending on where the wind is blowing, I will walk out my door and I'm like, this smells like peanut butter. It's like a mile away from me, if not more. And I will smell peanut butter. And I'm always like, I'm happy. And I look towards where I know the factory is. And I'm like, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, it all depends on the wind and the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you were to try and pinpoint which direction exactly
mm-hmm.
the Jif peanut butter factory is, you'd have to, like, walk around and zigzag and be like, okay, is it stronger here, less strong here?
Yeah.
It's not, like, seeing.
Yeah.
It's a very different sense.
Yeah, I know people that do, like, scent work, they've had their, like, trainers take a match, light a match, hold it out in the training field they're in to blow out the match, and then show where the smoke goes to show them where that – or, like, they'll put the smoke bombs in the field to show where the odor's moving.
Yeah.
And just let them know that even if their dog is literally the opposite direction of where they want them to go mm-hmm. or where the odor is, that how they work it back, which I think is really cool. And it shows them, they catch the scent on the right side of the field, but it's actually on the left mm-hmm. side only because the wind is pushing it that way. And then the dog has to follow that scent, that smoke-like substance.
Yeah.
Odor, whatever,
mm-hmm.
to think back to it.
Yeah, odors are, it's a confusing thing.
It's hard.
It's hard.
Yeah. The only reason I'm going on the rant about this is literally just to say it's, like, confusing for dogs. It takes a lot of gymnastics. Okay.
Okay.
Anything else?
Nope. That's great.
Okay. And that'll be the biggest part of our podcast for today.
Yeah. You only have 9 minutes left.
I don't have to run.
Okay.
The dogs have just been up, so I wanted to get home to them. Step 12. Planned live alerts. This is where we have our let me give me a look. This is where we know we're low.
Okay. Yes.
And we actually kind of go and just hang out by our dog. Am I incorrect on this?
No, I think you're right.
You're just giving me a look like
no, I'm not looking at you. I'm actually looking it up because I don't really remember my steps that closely.
Okay, step 12 is plan live alerts, unless I wrote this down wrong. The goal is that you know you're low, but your dog is still not at the point where they're actually going to alert to your lows because they haven't fully generalized that the odor can come from you.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, in a simplistic way, you go and hang out by your dog. And you kind of see, and the hard part about this is, like, not being like, hey, come smell me.
Yeah.
The goal ideally is that our dog kind of naturally, like, thinks or smells us in some way. Mm-hmm. Odor comes from, like, sweat, obviously, and saliva. So whenever, like, natural odors usually go up and try to shove their nose in the, you know, people's mouth.
Yep.
Take a behavior change. So we talked about behavior changes with the scent wheel. I would take a behavior change at this level.
Definitely.
Any type of, like,
anything
that they give that's, like, they start smelling you and then they start wagging their tail or anything like that, run with it.
Yeah. That's where Chip is at right now. Like, with live alerts, except for the exception the other day where he actually did it. But a good boy. But the vast majority of the time, he will just start, like, randomly while I'm sitting there on my laptop wiggling all over with a big old grin on his face like he's the happiest dog in the entire world, even though it's been silent for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And that is a change of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I see that, I check. And if I'm low or close to, then he gets a puppy party. Because what we want is to build up that confidence where they're like, oh my goodness, yeah, this is what happens. We always get that puppy party every time we smell it. Because the next time he'll be more confident if I'm ignoring him. He'll be like, hey, like, why are you not giving me my puppy party yet? Hello.
Hello.
Right? And he'll get a little bit pushier and pushier. Mm-hmm. And this is where we're building up the pushiness. Because ultimately, all we're doing is we're making the dog
persistent
and saying, you smell like this and I deserve my hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
So, lady, give me my hot dog.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think in your book, which I don't have it open anymore, I believe you have instructions for like maybe the first couple of times waiting for recognition and then saying, what is it?
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Do you still recommend that?
I think sometimes I think it's fine. I think it, especially it can be hard to just reward the dog. Especially kind of for self-trainers, it's hard, you know, to, you kind of want that final behavior.
Yeah.
And so I would say ideally the first couple reps just reward the change of behavior. Don't ask, what is it? But after like 3 to 5 times of this happening, then I think you can push it a little bit more and ask mm-hmm. for a, hey, you know, what is it? If they're not automatically, if they're not prompting or mm-hmm. initiating the alert behavior.
Yeah.
Which often they're not. Mm-hmm. I have found that like, I still do sometimes ask, what is it, after a couple reps of rewarding a change of behavior.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a fine line of, like, how distinct of an alert do we actually need?
Mm-hmm.
I think it depends on the client. So,
yeah,
like, in Barn Hunt, like, I have all my clients have really good alerts, mainly mm-hmm. because the clients I'm dealing with are, like, they need a clear indication. They're not going to be able to read their dog's mm-hmm. micro, a little, like, be like, yeah, it's kind of, it's over here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be a little quiet about it.
Yeah.
And I
think my theory is that I like to train a super clear indication
mm-hmm.
so that when stress and the environmental distractions come about, the dog gives me a medium indication.
Yeah.
But if I accept a medium indication, then stress in the environment causes a very slight indication.
Mm-hmm.
An indication I'm referring to alert behaviors.
Yeah.
So if I have a super clear, confident alert behavior at home, then out and about, you know, if the dog's not super certain about something, mm-hmm. Then, you know, their paw alert might become a little softer
mm-hmm.
or, you know, a little bit more hesitant or might be a paw lift rather than like a firm pawing behavior of the leg. And obviously, yes, you want to work on creating confidence in all environments, whatever. But there's a certain amount of reality when it comes to service dogs that, like, they're not always going to be super confident in every scenario.
Yeah.
So kind of the more you train for a confident alert at home, the, you know, the better they'll be in general. But, like, at the beginning, take any change of behavior. Because we haven't talked about this a ton, I don't think. But the odor of a live low blood sugar is different than the odor of a piece of cotton with saliva that's been frozen for 4 weeks, right? Like those are very, very different things.
Very different.
They present differently because one is like a source of the odor, and the other is just like all over. You smell like this. Yeah. What's happening?
Yeah.
But
also we have a lot of other odors going on too.
And then there's other odors. There's also the fact that the low blood sugar odor. Yeah, it's coming from your mouth and your saliva, but it's also coming from your feet and your sweat and your ankles and the back of your knees and who knows what else.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of changes. So reward your dog for any progress.
Yeah. I would say like this may be a little change of subject, but like with my dogs, I want them to have – I don't expect a dog to have the most beautiful alert in a trial unless they have 10 consecutive alerts on the odor. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, oh yeah, okay, you'll probably go in and have one good mm-hmm. alert and be fine at a trial.
Yeah.
But in practice, I'm expecting like 10 alerts in a row.
Yeah.
Without a reward until the 10th mm-hmm. one. Granted, I build a dog up aggressively, do not expect this. Like in the beginning, this is something that's aggressive. This is built mm-hmm. up over time. Is that something that you would push?
Yeah.
I think
it'd be a great thing to work up to.
Yeah. But I'm trying to think if it's like a requirement, though. I mean, I would like to have at least like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Or 10 may be excessive.
But I mean, working it up and getting that persistence without reinforcement, I think is yeah, definitely a good thing. Because then it shows that they, yeah, that they're persistent, that they know, they have that confidence.
Yeah.
They know exactly what they're looking for. And they know what is expected. Because that's where we see the live alerts fall apart or like never exist, is with our lovely standard poodles usually. Where they don't have the drive and the confidence to transition at this point.
Yeah.
And say, hey, I need my cookie because I smell the thing. So you have to make it super solid before this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing I do, well, okay, so health and safety. Never let yourself go low in order to do
a we should have that as a caveat. Live alert.
Yeah.
We should do have this as a caveat before every.
Yeah. That's rule number one. I don't care if you are running out of samples. Does not matter. Don't go low in order to make a sample. And even if you are on, you know, step 12, don't let yourself go low in order to have a planned live alert.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Because it means that you're everything's going well. There's no reason to mess with it.
Yes. Yeah. Your health is good. Yeah. So definitely that. And then the other thing is, if your dog is not getting this step, like, you are not looking at a like change of behavior whatsoever. So the dog does not care. What you can do is, since you your dog has theoretically done great in step 9 by this point, grab a scent sample and rub it on your ankle or something while you are low. So you're then pairing the low sample that they know with the live low to try and bridge it a little bit. I don't think you should have to do that with all the dogs. It's just a step you can try if your dog is just not getting it. Other things are increased motivation, go back to earlier steps.
Yeah.
Get a dog that's more driven.
Yeah.
But
those are the other options.
Those are kind of the other options, but you can pair those samples with the lives.
Yeah. I would say also, just to go back a smidge.
Yeah.
Don't do the, like, what is it if there's no recognition?
Oh, good point. Yeah, don't do that.
So, like, if your dog is just taking a nap beside you, you're low, or you have a hidden scent sample or whatever, like, I don't want you to be like, what is it? Like, to disturb the dog out of whatever napping place they're at.
Because then you are prompting the
then,
alert.
Then you're putting the, the alert on cue, or you're making a cue for the alert, and that is completely opposite of what we want.
That's a really good point. We just want to give the dog the confidence once they recognize it to perform the actual proper alert behavior.
Yeah.
We don't want to cue the alert.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then you can end up cueing the alert for the rest of their life, and then you might as well just check your blood sugar.
Right.
Yeah. If you're going to cue an alert.
Exactly. But yeah, no, keep your, look for that behavior change. Have your puppy party.
Yep.
Puppy party. Reminder is just the most fun thing that you can possibly do or imagine for your dog. Make it a really fun party. Lots of treats, lots of praise, toys if they like toys. Like, just keep it really, really amped for them. Yep. Okay. Anything else?
No, I think that's great.
Okay. Step 13. This is where we introduce high blood sugar on the scent wheel specifically. Yeah.
This one I think we can fly through.
Yeah, I think just pick what level you want your dog to alert to for highs. So what are, most people are like, what, 200, 250?
Yeah.
It depends on, I guess, the person.
I get anywhere from 180 to 220 are my most popular ranges.
Yeah.
And then some don't want it at all.
Yeah, that's true. So they pick whatever you want and then make some samples for the highs and then create – in range ones that are closer to, like, if you're wanting 200 and above to be the dog's alert, pick ones that are like 190 and 180 and stuff like that. So they're similar but different.
Yep. And you probably already have in ranges from doing the low within range.
Yeah, that's true.
So you can use those. That's perfectly fine. And then you basically just do the same thing as when you did lows within ranges. You just pop one high in the PVC container that has always your target odor. It's okay to mix low and high PVC pipe. Like, you should probably clean it. But there's bound to be some residual odor.
Yeah.
But you want to make sure that you use the same target container.
Yeah.
And you don't use one that is supposed to be blank. But anyways, you pop it in, and then you do in ranges in all the other containers. All the other containers, not just like one or two.
Yeah.
And then you have the dog search. They might false alert a couple times, but once they run across the high blood sugar, reward them.
Yeah.
A couple times in, they'll figure it out. And then over a couple days, keep doing it with different high samples, and they'll get the hang of it pretty fast.
Yeah. If they get the scent wheel with the lows, they're not going to have a problem with this at all.
No. They're not necessarily like going to get 100. They're not going to get it right necessarily the first time.
No.
But just reteach it the same way that you taught the low and in range one.
Yeah.
And they'll figure it out, and you'll do fine.
Yeah. They adapt fine. Dogs adapt well.
Yeah.
That's it for step 13. Great. Step 14, independent live alerts. So how to handle the dog doing their first live alert without you knowing that your sugar is low.
These are always fun.
This is like the moment where it's like, my dog just alerted me.
The moment we've been waiting for.
What do I do? Like the entire thing has led up to this point. With that, at least my processes, which I'm assuming is close to Libby's, are exactly the same. So the dog alerts. We tell our dogs that we're going to check. So we'll say, let's check. Terminology is kind of important. I like to pick the same words every time. So they paw, let's check, confirm via meter. Don't rely on your Dex or CGM and any PASI.
Yep.
I know everyone thinks that theirs is really, really accurate. I know they are. Yeah. But the reason I want you to check on your meter is that there is discrepancies.
Yep.
But there's also other things that will – you could theoretically be in range – but is dropping and that your dog could be catching it. So it's just better to verify.
And ultimately, if you go by your Dex all the time,
you don't need a dog.
You don't need a dog.
Yeah.
This is the most common thing I tell people is if your Dexcom is so accurate that it's never wrong.
Yeah.
Then it's way too much work to have a diabetic alert dog.
It's so much work.
Oh my gosh. And so expensive.
Yeah.
They're pain.
So much time, so much effort put in. Even if you self-train.
Yeah.
Not even counting the money, just the time.
The time.
And every time we go in public, it's like bringing a toddler in public.
Yes. It's so much work.
Yeah. Like it's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you confirm via meter.
Yep.
Every single time.
Every time.
If correct, I tell my dog, yes. You can follow up with a good low. And then I have my puppy party. So my puppy party is an assortment of giving them lots of treats, and then also wanting them to offer their alert behavior just to kind of keep on pushing that envelope of like, hey, yeah, I want you to do that nose nudge, that paw, and I'll give them treats for offering the alert behavior over and over again. I don't know how long I do my puppy parties. I don't know. 45 seconds, minute, I don't know. Just super, super fun. At the end, I'll, you know, tell them that all better, that I don't need their assistance anymore, and then treat the low. If the dog isn't correct, we instruct our dogs to say, well, watch. And then I set a timer on my phone because I will forget.
Absolutely.
And so I do a 10-minute timer, and then I check my sugar again at the end of 10 minutes if I'm now below my threshold. So if I want my dog to alert to 80 and below and I'm magically 75. Mm-hmm. Puppy party. Yep. Amazing.
Great.
Yep. And then that's great. Everything's hunky-dory. And then I don't know. I mean, that's basically it, right? Yeah, anything you add?
No, that's great. I think, this is like the exciting part.
Yeah.
I think a couple things are the dog's first live alerts where you don't know are still probably going to be changes of behavior.
Yeah.
They're not going to walk up and give you the beautiful paw or nose nudge.
Yeah, that's true.
So kind of go through the same process as you did for step 12.
Yeah.
Of like, okay, like I think that's it. Like, let's check.
Yeah.
And then your reward, or if you want to ask what is it, that's fine for a couple reps. So just kind of constantly be keeping an eye out. Second thing is, lots of dogs are going to start live alerting long before you get to like step 13
That's or 14. True too.
Like you'll be on step 4 or 5 and you'll see these changes of behavior.
Yeah.
So that's why number one, it's important to read through the entire book so you know what to do. Like when you see these changes of behaviors that you've already read about step 14 and you're like, oh yeah, okay, I should reward a change in behavior.
Yeah.
But don't stop going through all the steps.
Yeah.
Just because your dog has started showing a change in behavior.
Yeah.
There's there's still lots of things that they still need to learn. What else? Sometimes even the glucose meters are incorrect. So obviously Dexcoms are, or CGMs are, definitely like Freestyle Libres, but that's a whole nother thing. Dexcoms can be incorrect, but so can glucose meters. FDA allows them to be 20% off. And if you do the math on that, that means 100 could be an 80.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's a,
if your dog alerts and it says 100, technically you could be 80, which mm-hmm. is your dog's alerting threshold.
Yeah.
So usually if my dog is incorrect, I'll wash my hands and check again.
Yeah. Washing your hands. Oh, yeah. Point that out. Yeah. That's good.
Wash your hands, use an alcohol swab and check again. Ideally you do that all the first time, but real life sets in. Right. So I certainly don't. And then if like, you know, it was 100 the first time and it's 96 the second time or 94.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The dog's wrong. You set your timer. That's fine. But just keep in mind, because there's been more than a few times where my dog has been very confident and I'm like, no, that's a false alert, but I'll mm-hmm. check. And nope, they were actually right.
Oh, you're right.
And then anything else? I'm trying to think. I thought I had another point. This is a big one of, as you are going through all of these steps, this does not count as an independent live alert by any means, but since you are self-training, reward the dog, have a puppy party anytime you're low, because that will speed things up so much mm-hmm. faster. Like,
yeah,
there's no reason not to. So anytime you're at home or within scenting distance of your dog, run over to the fridge and give him a whole cheese stick
mm-hmm.
and have a puppy party. Even when they are a baby puppy and they have no idea why they are randomly getting cheese sticks, they'll start to put together that, like, hey, cheese sticks show up every time you smell like this.
Yeah.
And then you're just building that foundation and that confidence. And when you progress through the rest of the steps, they'll be even more confident because, like, oh my goodness, the piece of the puzzle, they all, you know, line up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. I can even tell because so Devil spent some time with the kid with type 1. And I can tell scent training before and mm-hmm. scent training now, I feel like he's more wiggly.
Mm.
He's like, I feel like more enthusiastic because
he gets it.
I think he gets it a lot more, like better than dogs I've trained in the past in the sense of enthusiasm for mm-hmm. the odor.
Yeah.
Where I feel like other dogs in the past, like they were enthusiastic because mm-hmm. like cheese was being given to them.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
And
they weren't quite sure.
Yeah, like I feel like I just have a different response. Granted, mm-hmm. this is my first spaniel, so maybe they're just built that way. I think they just did puppy parties every time the kid was low, and mm-hmm. I think it helped them to understand the odor even a little bit more.
I think so. Yeah. So whatever. Yeah. It can't hurt.
It can't hurt.
And that's a benefit that you all have with self-training that we don't have.
Yeah.
So utilize it.
Yeah, utilize it because I don't expect dogs to alert on me at all.
No.
I never really go low often. And I feel like it probably smells different than that's a type one.
Other one.
That's a whole other one that we don't know actually what they're alerting to.
We have a lot of theories.
But that's all I had.
Yeah.
So that's all the scent training steps.
That is all the steps. You're now an expert.
Right? Yes. I'm sure you won't have any questions at all. if you do have questions, we do consults.
Post them in the Facebook group.
If you have any questions about this, we're more than happy to assist as much mm-hmm. as we can via podcast.
Yep.
As much as you can explain dog behavior without seeing it. Anything?
No. I think that's great.
Yeah. Nothing's new.
Nothing's new. Because we've done this very frequently.
We've done this very frequently.
Yeah.
Well,
B might be matched.
B might be.
B has a tentative placement. So we'll see.
B may be going to a different state across the U.S.
Very, very far away.
Very, very far away.
We'll see.
Libby didn't say that she was like getting teary-eyed at all writing the email that B was matched or anything.
I was definitely not crying in the coffee shop.
No.
It's okay.
But yeah, no, but so yeah, Beavers.
But that's about it.
That's about it. Yeah.
Oh, so puppies. We still have puppies available.
Yeah, they're still there.
I mean, kind of ish available.
We're
going through interviews.
Interviews. They're a show working English show Cocker mix.
Should be fun.
To try to get the working Cockers a little less drivey, to give a little bit more of the chillness of the shows. And we'll see how that experiment goes.
Yeah.
So
Get your application in if you want one.
Yeah, definitely. I know I want one so bad. Just as like my own personal dog. It's so annoying. I have to like train dogs for a living, so I don't have room silly. For personal dogs in my life.
Silly.
Okay. All right. Okay. Until next
time.
All better.